Welcome everyone to the Sports Review. Don't know what happened there. May have cut out the intro music. But anyway, what a fantastic weekend in Auckland it's been. We've had some great weather. There's been some fantastic sports over the weekend. And of course, one of the things I was watching last night was the NRL Grand Final. And oh, those Melbourne Storm, they're just fantastic, aren't they? And joining us and on a much earlier time than usual, he's been our NRL expert this season. And it's a pleasure to have him on the line. It's Frank Endicott. Good afternoon, Frank, from a lovely Auckland, mate.
Yeah, good afternoon, Amon. Well, you'd be due to get some good weather up there.
Oh, certainly would. I tell you what, it's just been a cracking weekend. I'm in the studio here, and I will say to you right now, it is fair cooking in here. But talking about fair cooking, I tell you something, that NRL Grand Final, them Storm, it was an absolutely fantastic Grand Final. Melbourne 26, Penrith 20, and it all started off well for Melbourne. It's when an early penalty try, Frank. Ollam attempted the try, and Tyrone May kicked the ball out of his out of the motion of scoring.
Yeah, and the bunker actually got it spot on. You know, we all know that you can't stop a try by leading with a leg, and that's exactly what happened. And soon I had a crew here watching it at home, and as soon as it happened, we cried penalty try, and sure enough, it was.
Yeah, and it was a penalty try. I think when you looked at it, it was like it did look like that. For moments during that first half, Penrith actually looked quite dominant, and Josh Mansell was had a try disallowed for a bit of interference by Crichton. How did you think that call? I felt it was a fair call, Frank.
Yeah, I did. I thought there was interference there, which denied the Melbourne centre, Brinko Lee, a fair chance of stopping the try. He didn't really have to do it because they would have scored the try. Mansour would have scored the try anyway. But no, they got that one right. In fact, the only one they got wrong was Penrith's first try that was allowed, which wasn't a try. So, and that was a real bad blunder.
So then after that, a few penalties from Cameron Smith, the wily old veteran. And then he's not really made a mistake all season. A Nathan Cleary pass gets intercepted by Bulavalu, and all of a sudden, it's 16-0.
Yeah, good night nurse, wasn't it, when he got the ball and ran the length of field, about 90 metres. But that's you're right, that's about the only thing I've seen Cleary do wrong all year, and, you know, you wouldn't blame him for that. That can always happen. If he doesn't get the intercept, they score in the corner. So, you know, I wouldn't blame Nathan Cleary too much for that at all. You know, it's just one of those things that happened. We've seen plenty of intercept tries this year.
Oh, yeah, and I have to say that and then, of course, in the backbreaker, right on the stroke of half-time was Cameron Smith's try. It was a fairly, you know, soft enough try, but that really put Penrith on the back foot chasing the game from there on.
Well, with all Cameron Smith's grand finals, and I didn't realise this myself until they mentioned it, but that was his first try in a grand final. What a wonderful player, though. I know that Ryan Pappenhausen got the Clive Churchill Players Award and deserved it, but it was certainly going to be between him and Cameron Smith, wasn't it? They were the two standouts.
Oh, yeah, and also felt Nelson Solomon Afoa was very, very good. I was actually just going to get to that there. And, of course, we talk Ryan Pappenhausen right at, and, of course, the second half, the grand final, it just throws out moments, doesn't it, Frank? It just, where there's that bit of brilliance. And, of course, then Ryan Pappenhausen produced that bit of brilliance that really, I believe, possibly shut the game for Penrith.
Yep. Well, you know, what a revelation he's been all year. You know, this little fella, he's built like a jockey, and he's just so tough, and his speed is, he's just got speed to burn. And I haven't actually seen the squads for the State of Origin yet, but I would imagine he'd have to be in there. He's in, Frank. He's had a great year.
Yeah, we all talk about Craig Bellamy and his great coaching, but probably the real heroes at the Storm have to be the guys that work in the scouting and the talent identification, because I tell you what, I wish if the Warriors were looking for someone, find the people and the talent identification at the Melbourne Storm, because they just find players out of nowhere. It's like you lose Billy Slater and you find Orion Pappenhausen.
Yeah, but they've been doing that for years, haven't they? They've been doing that for over a decade. And you know, and I've worked with a lot of those blokes too, and they really know their business, and they go looking for players no matter where they are in the world. But most of these fellas are just coming up in local competitions and that, and they just make something of them. I mean, you know, look at the players are going to lose, or they have lost, you know, like the Billy Slaters and that. Yet they still come up. And Cooper Cronk, well, they still come up with players that do the job for them.
Yeah, I just think that, you know, for any professional organisation, it doesn't matter what sport you are, you need to look at the Melbourne Storm program on how they find players, how they identify players. And, you know, like they identified a Nelson Solomono Afoa at a first 15 rugby in Wellington.
In Wellington, yeah. That's right. Yeah, I remember when they signed him, actually, and the bloke who signed him was actually, he died at a young age, and he was over here all the time looking for players in Wellington and Christchurch, all the time.
Yeah, no,
fantastic. They've been their identification, and that'll continue there.
Yeah, well, I was just going to say, of course, after that Pappenhausen try, there was a late comeback by Penrith, and of course, I don't want to be discourteous to Phil Gould, but when he said, oh, they could win it from here, but then, of course, Nathan Cleary scores with probably less than a minute to go, and then I thought, wow, what more could happen this season? If it went, and I wouldn't have been surprised if we ended up going to Golden Point, but in the end, the storm came through. But it's been a fantastic year of NRL.
Yeah, it has been, and I think it was capped off by the two best teams in the NRL playing in the grand final. And you know, the weather was wet, the ground stood up brilliantly, and we had a dry weather game. In a wet day. So, you know, it just shows the class of the two teams that were in there. I mean, Penrith were absolutely shocked by the quick start again from Melbourne Storm. Yeah. Gee, they've had some good starts recently, haven't they? And teams just don't recover from it. But that was a good effort from Penrith to come back. And let's face it, with one play left in the match from that kickoff and Melbourne having two guys in the sin bin, they were down to 11. They had a chance of scoring late, and what a finish that would have been.
Oh, that would have been... nothing would have surprised me, because that would have been the season with actually the topsy-turvy season that has been the NRL. And, of course, one guy I felt had a really good game for Penrith was Isaiah Yeo. I felt he was fairly solid. But, of course, next up in a few weeks' time, there is... And next week, I believe, is a bit of State of Origin.
Oh, yeah, I look forward to that too. And I haven't seen the teams yet, but I'm going to have a look at the teams.
You may have a bit of disappointment when I tell you the news that Jerome Luai has been picked in the New South Wales Blues.
Oh, well, I hope he says no. I hope he says no and plays for the Kiwis.
I think every Kiwi or Western Samoan rugby league fan would be saying, please don't go there. But there were a lot of players like that. Branko Lee has been picked in the Queensland side. Now, Branko Lee was they picked him up from the Gold Coast, probably wasn't really doing fantastically well there, but then goes into a Melbourne system and just clicks. It's
a very interesting point you make, because he did, and he was doing nothing at the Gold Coast. And then, believe me, he was at Canberra Raiders before that, wasn't he? And I think he got moved on from Canberra Raiders also. So he's been to two or three clubs, been moved on, and he goes into the Melbourne Storm setup, and look what happens. You get your grand final ring. You know, again, you just can't give the club enough accolades.
And Penrith, their day will come in the next few years. Believe there will be a few players moving on. Addo Carr is heading to the West Tigers. It looks like a couple are heading to the Gold Coast. So it will be another bit of a rebuild, but if anybody can rebuild, it's Melbourne.
Yeah, well, they got their two wingers leaving, haven't they? They got Vunivalu leaving to go to rugby union.
Yeah, he is.
So there's going to be a loss of a couple of absolutely fantastic speedy wingers there, but they'll replace them.
Of course,
we don't know what's happened with the big gun, of course, Cameron Smith. He's had 430-odd NRL matches. Is he going to have another season and maybe get around that 460 mark?
Nothing would surprise me. 37 years of age and the guy is just an absolute champion, you know. Frank, yeah. I have to say one thing. During this NRL season, I've really enjoyed your input. I remember calling you up, and next week we might just give you a bit of gardening leave for a week, and we can catch up and maybe have a quick chat about Origin. And hopefully, when are you likely to be up in Auckland?
There is a Kiwi reunion on in a couple of weeks, 2 or 3 weeks that I've just been invited to. So I'm just toying whether they come up for that. If I do, I'll let you know.
Well, Frank, I think we'd all like to see you up here in Auckland, and I personally would because I owe you a few. Yeah.
Well, I'm sure we've got plenty of time to have them, but if I come up, we'll destroy a few, eh?
I think we will, and I think I'll pick the bar because I've got a feeling that you'll probably say, well, these Aucklanders have heaps of money, we'll go to the most expensive bar. So I might have to go to the bank to get a mortgage out.
it all goes down the same way.
It certainly does. Frank, it's been really great having you on. We'll try and catch up in a few weeks' time. Really enjoyed, and hopefully if the show's on air next year, that we'll be able to do this again. So thanks a lot, Frank. I've really enjoyed it.
Pleasure, Eamon. Have a great day.
Hey, mate, same to you, and all the best.
Thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, that was Frank Endicott, former Kiwis and Warriors coach. He's really been fantastic helping me out and get an NRL expert for this show. Nick, we're just going to play a bit of music, and then we're going to try and hopefully, fingers crossed, we try and get hold of AJ Wheaton. Okay, everyone, that was a little bit of music, and online we have former All Black legend and president of the New Zealand Barbarians, AJ Wheaton. Good afternoon, AJ. How you going, mate?
Well, not too bad. A beautiful day, mate, and I've just been for a walk, so the timing couldn't be better.
Oh, that's good, mate, and I have to say it's been a fantastic weekend of fantastic weekend of Mitre 10 Cup, some of which I know you'll be cheering about, but it will be the red and black demise, which I know you'll be, and we'll talk a bit about that Battle of the Bridge. But just wearing your, as president of the New Zealand Barbarians, and just wearing your Barbarians cap, this weekend coming up will be the semi-finals of the National 85 kgs Rugby Competition. Just from your perspectives, how vital is this for rugby in New Zealand?
Oh, look, we're behind it 100%. We think this was initiated several years ago and it died a bit of a natural death. And with discussions with New Zealand Rugby and Mike Hester and his crew, an opportunity to come aboard and put some dollars behind us. We're about amateur rugby. Secondary school rugby, as you know, the Barbarians are very focused on giving opportunities for our young men and young women. And this one came up as well, and sadly with COVID, it wasn't going to take off. So we jumped behind it. We think it's a fantastic opportunity working with New Zealand Rugby, and we get an opportunity to see, you know, these men who are really the base, the sound base for these clubs. They go back, they support their clubs, they great camaraderie, and give them an opportunity to get on a bigger stage, Piggy. And we've got the semi-finals, as you said, next week. It's been fantastic, and we look to take it even bigger and further next year.
Yeah, well, I'll be down in Wellington to watch the Eden Lizards play Eastbourne Rugby Club. I'm a former Eden Lizard myself, so, So I used to play restricted rugby. You might laugh, AJ, the size of me now, but yeah. So I'll be down there. AJ, just so, we might as well head on to a bit of Mitre 10.
Yeah, fire away,
man. Yeah, hey, listen, what a bit of a start. Obviously, Otago had a good first up win, 32-7 over Northland. Of course, a couple of tries to a guy called Freedom by Nicola. And of course, John O'Hickey, ex-Auckland halfback, playing first 5'8" because Josh O'Hickey had been a naughty little boy and been put on the naughty boy's chair. So that was a really good game. But then we get to, now Cantabrians probably won't like hearing this, the massacre that was at Tauranga Domain, Bay of Plenty 44, Canterbury 8.
Well, there's no way I saw that one. Just quickly on that Otago match, Tom Donnelly, you know, he's pretty staunch down there. And you got rules. If you break the rules, big time, he's 6'7". You don't muck about with the coach. And he threw a line in the sand, so good on him. The Cantabrians, wow. I did not see that coming like you. Bay of Plenty, though. At Tauranga, don't forget, they took Auckland to the wire. Probably a wee bit unlucky, you could say, not to take the blue and white.
Definitely.
But here they, all the ducks in a row, played extremely well in the pace of the game and, thoroughly deserved their win and 40-odd points. Yeah, old Canterbury, they're under the pump a bit.
They're definitely under the pump and could be potentially relegated. One of the things that I knew you'd laugh at that somehow. But one of the things I liked to that game was Mitch Carpat and Kurt Eklund were really good. But Chase Teatea, but what was it? Joe Weber, who we used to see in the Seven Circuit. God, he was an absolute beast.
Yeah, no, some of the big players stepped up, and I think it was just really, they were going to take one of the big scouts, Piggy. It was just a matter of who. As I said, they've been close. They're a pretty gutsy side. They got some talent. It was just trying to get it all together. And as I said, I just think that Canterbury were the one that wore it. And as you mentioned, some of the big players stood up there, and they got some talent out wide. There's no doubt about that. If they can give them some decent quality ball.
Oh yeah, they looked fantastic. Hawke's Bay had a Shield challenge against the Manawatu. Hamish Mackay, my old mate Hamish Mackay, must have been jumping up and down when the Manawatu scored first. But Hawke's Bay were just too good, 47-12. Now, one guy I'm really impressed is the halfback Fokitava. He must be pushing hard on a Super Rugby contract.
Yeah, look, I agree. And poor Hamish Mackay, he gets excited easily. There's no way he could take the field after the last time I've seen him. Look, I think
that
Fokitava's playing well. He's leading, but he's got that lovely combination with Mapuche.
Yes.
And boy, is that humming. And they're just running the cutter so well. But look at your forward pack. You've got Ash Dixon there, you know, tremendous leader. You've got O'Connor, Flanders, and that Nicolelli too on the flank. So pretty solid.
Yeah, what a good loose forward trio.
Ash Dixon leading, and as I said, we've got a nice combination there, and Lissania and Fomai on the wings, mate. She's a pretty decent side.
Oh, yeah, and I think their odds on favourite to win that championship, they look really good. Then we go to the Battle of the Bridge, and of course, North Harbour get bragging rights, and of course, you know what, North Harbour rugby supporters, I've got a couple of mates as long as they beat Auckland or Canterbury, they love to, you know, love to celebrate. But watching that game, I was Bryn Gatland was very, he controlled that game very well. But couple of early tries for Auckland. Of course, Akira Ione looked absolutely menacing out there. What were some of your thoughts on that, AJ?
Well, I thought that, once again, Auckland having leading the top of the table, I thought that going to harbour, Kieran Kane is a wise old owl. Look, their season's been up and down. They've just missed a couple they should have won. This makes their season, so this is the game they would have targeted. They're not going to win the championship. They may stay up, they may not, and this just makes their season. So you did right. It's about bragging rights. To say that they've beaten Auckland, they've had a good season. And if Auckland couldn't see that coming, well, I certainly could. I thought it would go to the wire. It wouldn't surprise me if Harbour won, and they did. And I've already received about 8 texts calling me a loser. Bad luck, the bridge rocks. And I'm just trying to tell people that I actually wasn't playing. But you know how the rivalries there, the derby, and good on them. I think, yeah, there's a couple of games they could have won Harbour. Gatlin runs the cutter well. I was pretty impressed with Stevenson. I think he's a bit of a handful. And, you know, the front row, you've got old Nick Mayhew back there, Tolai and Mafiaia. And I tell you what, he's playing well, is this boy Hunt. Jeepers, he's everywhere.
Yeah,
and he just caused some nightmares for that Auckland team. I only played well, yep. Gibson never does a bad one. But they missed, I think, Jack Whetton in the second row with Scrafton.
Yeah, they certainly did.
And,
yeah.
And the one thing I do say is they just got a bit of discipline issues at times. Two boys in the bin for 10 minutes, you're not going to win a game with that pigeon. And I tell you, they paid the price.
They certainly did. Just getting back to Dylan Hunt. Now, he's been signed by the Blues, so that's quite a good signing for the Blues. The Blues are going to have a great forward pack now next season with Dylan Hunt, Nepal Laulala being signed. So that's for Blues fans, there's going to be a lot of optimism and a lot of hope for next year. Some of the other games on Sunday, Tasman 47, Southland 12, David Harvili just looks, I don't know how the, you know, he must be coming close to that All Blacks that All Black squad, but he looked just outstanding.
Yeah, he led them well. As I said, I think he's certainly on the radar. I think Whanganuku all played well, but I mean, they've been a bit up and down as well. I think Nangerville in the midfield, just very solid. Again, you know, Mitchell Hunt controlled it there, but I like the boy Christie. I think he's a good little player.
Good player.
But it's good to see Isaac Ross on. Haven't seen him in the country for a while, playing the full lot. And we know they're the talented team. They're back at top of the table after a couple of indifferent matches. I think it'll be plain sailing here. They'll be in the finals. It's just a matter of whether they have a semi, host one or not. But I tell you what, with the competition, you wouldn't know what's happening week in, week out. And I think that's what made it such a good competition this year. Anyone can beat anyone on their day.
Yeah, well, Wellington, just getting back to what you said, Isaac Ross, it was a shame how he left New Zealand rugby. He, you know, a former All Black, but it was a shame that we lost him. But now we've got him back, so he's giving back to the game on a local scene. Wellington were really good over counties. Vi Fifita, we tend to, you know, another ex-All Black really stepping up in this level of football.
Yeah, again, you know, they're a good side, Wellington. If they get it together, they are hard to beat, and that is right across the board. I think it was interesting, good to see Kieran Reid out there, obviously managing his games. And look, I think it was, I watched that game, actually, I was quite interested to see how he was going to go, but with, 20 minutes to go, there's only a few points in it, and then bang, the doors just open and fill your boots.
Oh, and, a couple of loose interceptions,
They were chasing their tails, and... I mean, Ben Nichols, you know, we're going to see a lot more of him for Fifita on the side roads. Very talented. Garden Basher, you know, leading at the first five, Arso Proctor. And this boy Goosen, I mean, he's a good player.
Fantastic.
And sad to see him go offshore. But Wellington, just a good all-round squad, not let alone 15. And that's the team I'll be watching come close finals time.
Yeah, I think that they are a real danger come semi-finals time for any of the teams. Waikato are now on top of the table, 27-20, a tough game against Taranaki. Liam Messam had a reasonable game. I was quite impressed with the Sky Revere's Rehana, who's no relation to Bruce Rehana. And, of course, Stephen Perifetta actually had a really good game for Taranaki.
Oh, you know, the old Naki, they'll look back, they'll build from this. Again, you know, they've gone close a couple of times. I mean, that boy Potros, I think he's been solid all year. You've got the Boshiers there in Croswell. Look, Riccatelli, I mean, they've got some experience there, haven't they? They just haven't put it together consistently enough. And when you're playing Waikato, really, who've come under the radar, leading the competition, they've beaten Auckland. And as you said, you know, Messam's back there. And look at that side row. Jacobson, Messam and Thompson. You know, couple of old war horses there. And Ratama and the halfback Smith, I think, again, a lovely combination. So, again, a team that's on fire, and they aren't going to be easy to beat, mate.
They certainly aren't. And, of course, next Saturday we have the All Blacks versus the Wallabies in the first of the Rugby Championship games. What change would you make any? Obviously, there's going to be a change with possibly Hoskins Satutu coming in for Artie Sevier, whose wife's due to have a baby. So, what would you make some changes to that All Black side from what played that second Bledisloe Test stage?
Well, I think they've got to go in with some confidence and consistency. Obviously, I think Ozzie has said, look, you know, the combination works. Do you leave Hoskins to come on that 20 minutes and provide that impact, or do you start him? He's got Papali'i there. He's got choice. So I'm pretty sure they'll sort that out quickly. I think it's just quite exciting. We've got some youngsters now that are having to step up. Let's see what they've got. They're going into the big cauldron, and can't get any better at playing Aussie to retain the Bledisloe Cup. So it's going to be a huge match, and I think they'll go in there, as I said, with a bit of confidence, knowing that if they play to their best, they've just got the wood on Aussie.
This one I think is going to be a real tough one, and as an All Blacks fan, I am a little bit worried, because I think Australia has really has shown us something that they are going to be competitive this year. And I think under Dave Rennie, he's actually changed some of their structures and the way they're playing, and some of their young loose forwards that are coming through, like the Hoopers, the Wilsons. You've got people like James O'Connor at first 5'8", who really plays a good game. So yeah, it's going to be an interesting game next Saturday.
Oh, look, but that's what we want. I mean, one thing with Dave, he's brought Australia, he's given them some confidence, put some structures, as you said, and the culture he's very strong on, and we're seeing the benefits of it, of a better Australian side. And this is what we want. We want to be tested, and the Aussies are going to do that. They realise that they've got to beat the All Blacks to keep it alive. I think they would be a bit disappointed in the way they, that 20 minutes after half time where they performed, missed some tackles, and Caleb and Mwanga running the cutter and Bowden opened them up a bit. They'll be very disappointed. I see vast improvements there. And if they can just bring that energy that they brought to the first test and cut out some of those mistakes, well, we're going to have a humdinger of a match. But I'm pretty sure the All Blacks are aware of the danger. But anyway, we're going to be sitting down glued to our TVs, because he's going to be a rip snorter.
Well, I will be in Wellington supporting my old team, the Eden Lizards. So hopefully I don't have too many afternoon beverages after the game and try and concentrate and see that game. But anyway, AJ, it was great having a chat to you. Thanks for coming on a bit later than usual. But we will talk next Monday. I'll be just straight into the studio off the plane. So and we'll have a chat about the All Blacks and the Mitre 10 Cup. Thanks a lot, AJ, and have a great rest of your Labor Day, mate.
Yeah, you too, mate, and have a few jars for me down in Wellington, mate. You've earned it.
Oh, yeah, well, come the 7th when the final's on, I'll be knocking on the Barbarian's door saying that I'm a personal friend of the President.
The other 390.
Good one, son. Good day. Okay, catch you later, AJ. Yeah. Have a great week. Have a great day. Cheers, mate.
Thanks.
Ladies and gentlemen, that was AJ Wetton. Next up, we'll have the madness of Brenda McNeice talking all things football. Let's play a bit of music. And next up, we'll have the Mad Irishman.
love. Yes, it's all for love. It's all for the dreams you've given to me. It's all for the love. It's all for the love. Yeah. It's all for the way that you've given. I'm living each day. All for the love. Yes, it's all for the love of you.
Okay, welcome back. Well, it's been a fantastic weekend of EPL. I think the whole world's gone mad, but as usual, joining us on Labor Day. Now, he's not at the pub, which he told me he could be, but he's not at the pub. If you hear any noise in the background, he's probably at the pub. Please welcome Brendan McNeice. Brendan, good afternoon. How's your Labor Day going, and how's your weekend been?
Oh, fantastic. Nothing like a long weekend. Means that you can get up and watch a bit of football on a Sunday evening during the night, and you know, work the next day, which is absolutely fantastic. But it's not fantastic if your team's not playing well, your team.
Yeah, well, we won't talk. Well, what about your team in Scotland? They're not going that great guns either. I've got to say something. The football world's gone mad. The EPL world's gone mad. The results that are coming out, I've just gone through some of these results and I'm just shaking my head. This morning, Leicester beating Arsenal. You picked their Arsenal to be contenders, and I thought maybe. Jamie Vardy goal. We had obviously some of the other results, like Southampton over Everton. Everton have been flying high.
2-0, yeah. Look. The best way to summarise that, Eamon, I just think is just have a look at the top eight: Everton, Liverpool, Aston Villa, Leicester City, Leeds, Southampton, Crystal Palace, and Wolves. Right, we're six games into the season. Right, we'll temper it with that. We'll have that caveat, but not in the top eight. You've got no Arsenal, no Chelsea, no Manchester City, no Spurs, no Manchester United. Manchester United haven't won at home this season.
And I tell you what, that game, if I looked at the highlights, was a bore fest. Both sides were terrible.
You're using the word highlights in a very, very liberal fashion, Mr. Halliday.
Well, you know, I try and be as liberal as I can, but then then my right-wing views come in about Manchester United. They're absolute crap.
It was turgid to look at. I had a look at it. It would actually have put a glass eye to sleep. It was absolutely underwhelming stuff. This is Manchester United we're talking about here. 15th in the table. Haven't looked like a team all season. And, you know, at Old Trafford, they used to call it the fortress. It now looks like a library.
And, of course, Liverpool... They had a good win over Sheffield United. Even though they've got no Virgil van Dijk, they still know how to put a team together. And, of course, Jurgen Klopp is the best manager there. But Manchester City.
Underwhelming again. And we've been saying it on the show every week, week in, week out. I think Pep is getting found out because the fact is that they know that UEFA is on their case in relation to the spending of the money, and they know that they had to cut that back. And when the oil money is just running a little bit dry, it just seems that he can't get a performance out of these players. Pep Guardiola, right throughout his whole career, has never went anywhere and won anything without a golden checkbook. And I have said it at the start of the season. I don't expect him to see the end of the season.
I don't expect my. I think it will, we should actually have a side bet. Who gets sacked first, Solskjaer or Guardiola? Because at least, well, obviously with Guardiola, if he does get sacked, he'll just be picked up by Paris Saint-Germain, Juventus, or one of those.
Oh, clubs. They always end up somewhere. Like it's just a money go round. But fair. Even we've just had a crack at your team, and it's time now for a bit of self-flagellation for myself, because we've got to talk about Scotland.
What's gone wrong there?
Oh, Celtic's week from hell continued after losing the Old Firm game last week. Celtic lost to their deadly rivals Rangers, which is an unforgivable sin. And then in Europe, they lost 3-1 at home to AC Milan, and really were completely outplayed. Desperately needing a win then in the Scottish Premier League, they played Aberdeen overnight, and I watched the game, and it was awful. Celtic were absolutely uninspiring, and it was a 3-3 draw in the end at Pittodrie, but I think the scoreline flattered both sides. Now, Neil Lennon, the manager, He's under enormous pressure now. He's publicly admitted that he struggled with depression and various issues with his mental health. That has now become really, really public. And the thing is that if you've got mental health issues in Glasgow, the last thing you want to be doing is losing to Rangers, because that's not going to put you on the comeback trail. It's a really, really, really serious situation for Celtic. They're going for 10 in a row titles. They're now 6 points behind their deadly rivals, Rangers, albeit with a game in hand. But the form is not good. It is not looking very, very good. And there's already now... a lot of speculation who's going to replace Neil Lennon, because there's like one person quipped on Facebook that the Celtic's form would have got Jock Stein sacked. Never mind Neil Lennon. But they're talking about all sorts of different things in relation to his replacement. But the hot favourite, and you heard it here first,
yep,
Eddie Howe.
Whoa, that is a really, really good buy for Celtic. He's a bloody good manager, Brendan. Now, of course, some of the other stuff, it's like, I was just going to say to you, like, we were talking about managers getting sacked. Obviously, Guardiola, if he gets sacked, will get another job. Solskjaer, if he gets sacked, he might get a bit part in Coronation Street or something like that. Stan and Hilda's illegitimate great grandson.
He could be the new Chesney.
anyway, I'm going to be in Wellington.
Yes.
Now, you've called me up. You know, this is. I was almost going to block your phone number because it was like stalking. Now, we are going to meet for lunch on Friday, I believe.
We absolutely are, and I'm going to turn it on for you. We'll have a post-free for you.
Rather you not.
We'll have a post-free for you at Wellington Airport, and they will make sure that you get the welcome that you deserve, and we'll have a bit of lunch, a few pints and a few bets. And I was just wondering, did you have a bet at all in the Cox Plate?
I didn't have a bet on the Cox Plate. How did you go?
It's a sad old story as well, as per usual. The Irish master, Aidan O'Brien, wizard of the Coolmore Stud, trained the 1-2, the Quinella, Sir Dragonet and Armoury.
Yeah.
That was absolutely fantastic, but I picked the wrong Irish horse. I picked the one that was second. And unfortunately, I didn't have the Quinella, or I didn't have it each way. But such is life. Like $5 million, $5 million. It's not Australia's richest race, but it's Australia's best race.
Well, yeah, it is. It's one of the best. And, you have a look at it. Like in the past, there's been some real classic. Cox Plates,
and of course, Bonecrusher,
our Waverley Star. And even in Australia, they still rate that as one of the best, one of the top five horse races.
Of all time,
and and remember watching it as a young fella in 1986, and I was a very young fella. I'll let you know that too. And I thought, wow. so that and of course, we're coming up to Melbourne Cup. I've got some people are saying pick the chosen one. A little bit. I'm going to check the form out a few days before, but we're going to try and next Monday try and get a pickster or a bit of an amateur bookie on there to give us our tips for Melbourne.
I've got the very man for you, the former editor of the Friday Flash and the Best Bits, a fellow called Mr. Michael Brown, the Brown A on racing, and he will be your man next week, and he will sort it all out for you.
Well, I had a friend of mine called Pat the Pick.
You can't go over the top too much on Melbourne Cup Day, because you've got to give the punters all the very best of the information. And, of course, I'll certainly chip in with my knowledge as well.
Yep, you're more than welcome. Do you want to take my flight back to Wellington to Auckland and run the show? And I'll earn the money you earn doing knowing what you do, Brendan, which is a lot more than I do.
Well, I'm not surprised that you're actually working on Labor Day, because it's the only day you've ever worked.
We work for the same type of organisation, and I don't have the opportunities to go out and network it on Friday afternoon. I have to work.
Hey, we call it networking or not working.
Well, we'll find out. I'm a bit concerned. We will catch up next Friday. I'm a bit concerned, not only on the money point, it's probably more the liver than the money I'm worried about. Brendan.
There's plenty of life left in your liver, Eamon.
Brendan, I've known you for over 20 years, and I've only known you when you've been drinking.
What
sort of
expect a bag else from a proper Irishman?
Absolutely not. Okay, Brendan, we'll catch you. We'll be back on air around the usual time next Monday, but I'll definitely will catch up with you on Friday. I don't know, maybe not looking forward to the sore head on the Saturday morning going out to Paniki to watch a game. So have a great rest of the Labor Day, and we'll catch you on Friday in Wellington, Brendan. Take care, mate.
Take care of yourself. Cheers, boss.
Ladies and gentlemen, that was the madness of Brendan McNeice. A bit concerned about going to see him, because I've got a feeling that I don't know whether my wallet or my liver is going to be able to take this. So, yeah. So, next up, we'll have a bit of music. And next up, we'll have Clint Brown on the line talking to us a bit of his sporting commentary of the weekend.
Bring me down dirty weather. Got a stack of bills remaining unpaid. Call on the credit team to fix it. This week I had to miss it. Nothing but lack of work to blame. The shame. Nothing but lack of work to blame. The shame. They say they do it for the love, not the money, but the living in the sunlight. Rich now working, got a daddy down the blind. I'll hold just to be sung in love, right? And here I stay in the gutter, turning butter into diamond, diamond, diamond. Turning butter into diamond, diamond, diamond. So tell me, what would you do if you could make diamonds? For the love, not the money, but the living in the sunlight. Rich now working, got a daddy turned to blind. I'll hold just to be so young and love right. And here I stay in the gutter, turning butter into diamond, diamond, diamond. Turning butter into diamond, 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 diamond. Turning butter.
Thank you.
Hi, Clint. Hi.
G'day, Eamon. How are you?
Yeah, sorry, mate. I didn't realise my mic was off, so I was just giving you a proper introduction. But as we've just mentioned, in that you were one of the four people that really was started sports at TV3, and of course, it's great having you online. I got your number through the crazy Irishman, Mr. Brendan McNeice, but who I'm not looking forward to spending money. But I tell you what a weekend of sports it's been, and of course, motorsports. I know you're a big fan of this. Scott Dixon has done it again, mate. Isn't he just fantastic?
Yeah, well, before we get on to a great weekend of motorsport, I just got to say, if you're going to go out with Brendan McNeice, book yourself an Uber early. And if you've got, his picks from the Brown Iron Racing, and if you've got Pat the Pick, you may need another guy called Bob the Banker.
Yeah, I certainly will, because the simple reason is that, as I said, Clint, I've known Brendan for over 20 years, like you've known Brendan, and all I've ever known him to do is drink.
Oh, no, mate, he's a great guy. You'll have a fantastic time, and he'll look after you, and you'll have a wonderful time having a few picks on the GGs. And I've got to say, I do like your tip on the chosen one, because I was having a good listen to the Cox Plate, because it's always a great race. And I, like you guys, go back to that Bone Crusher, Al Waverley Star Classic, because that year, 1986, I actually did the Coastal Classic Yacht Race from Auckland up to Russell.
Oh, that's fantastic race.
And I was seasick on the way up, and then on the Sunday, Saturday, we were sort of recovering, having a nice cruise around the beautiful Bay of Ireland, and then got back and listened to that and watched that race, and it's the all-time epic showdown. And also that Cox Plate is part of that big Melbourne carnival, that spring carnival that builds up to the mighty Melbourne Cup. And I do like the one that chose one, because my son's name is Corey Brown, and he's a famous jockey that's won the Melbourne Cup on things like the Reckoning and a few other horses. So we always have a bet on him when he's riding. And then Corey's name actually means the chosen one. So we'll have a bit of a tipple on him for the mighty Melbourne Cup. So that was a good start to the weekend. And as for today, Scotty Dixon, well, it's been a marvellous weekend for motorsport, because earlier this morning you had Lewis Hamilton scoring win number 92 in Formula 1, and he had to do it after losing the lead and then regaining the lead, and then there was slippy and grippy in the Portuguese Grand Prix, and some of the tracks they've gone to this year have been absolutely fantastic, like Mugello, and then, of course, the Portuguese Grand Prix today. So well done to Lewis Hamilton, who breaks the record by Michael Schumacher, so he's now got 92, and, you know, he might be the first guy to move on and win 100 races in Formula 1. Then, of course, you had Earl Bamba taking out the 24 Hours of Spa in Belgium. And this morning, Scotty Dixon making it 6 IndyCar championships, going all the way back to 1999 when he left as a young Kiwi kid. And I remember seeing a quote by Chip Ganassi, who he races for, you know, Scotty's become just an absolute legend in IndyCar racing now. And he said he's just a quiet Kiwi kid that seems to go fast. And here he is as a 40-year-old now stacking up win number 6. So he's just an absolute legend and a great inspiration to all the Kiwi motor racers. And on the same day that Scotty Dixon nails win number 6 in the IndyCar Championship, Scotty McLaughlin makes his IndyCar debut by crashing out. But he still said it was awesome, but he said it was the best day of his life outside of his wedding. And as soon as he crashed out, you know how the Aussies claim Pavlova and claim everything New Zealand. So the Aussies were trying to claim him as their Australian supercar champion, rightly so, and also, you know, the Bathurst champion. And as soon as he crashed, I said, oh, no, he is an Aussie, they can have him. As soon as he said, you know, it was the best day of my life, I reckon the Aussies would have turned around and said, no, he's a Kiwi, they could have him, because how can you crash out an IndyCar on debut and that be better than winning the Supercar Championship or Bathurst? And, of course, you go back to last weekend, hard on the heels of the Giz, you know, Shane Van Gisbergen finally winning Bathurst with a brilliant drive. So it's been a great week, couple of weeks for Kiwi motorsport, mate. It's been brilliant.
It's been absolutely fantastic. Of course, Scott Dixon is only one away from equaling the record, or he'll equal the IndyCar records, Clint?
Yeah, he will. Right now, he's one behind AJ Foyt. who was there watching today with his team. So Scotty can, you know, Scott Dixon can go on and get another championship. He will equal the record of all-time wins in the IndyCar Championship. And you look at what Lewis Hamilton has just done, is breaking the record of Michael Schumacher. He's a global superstar. And Scott Dixon's a global superstar, but huge in America. And of course, slightly under the radar here in New Zealand. But if you've ever met him, I mean, I've had the privilege of meeting Scott many, many times, and he's such a great guy, just like Shade Van Gisbergen, just like Scotty McLaughlin, just like Earl Bamber, you know, good down home, good understated good Kiwi guy that are really, really good at what they do.
Yeah. I have to say, talking about Australia, did he get a chance to look at the NRL last night? I'll say one thing, you know, like you've been involved in TV, like the TV production, it's like watching a Steven Spielberg movie trailer, the way they get everyone prepared for it. Doesn't matter if it's NRL or AFL, but what did he think of that grand final, Clint?
Yeah, great, but weird. This whole year's been weird with COVID. Yeah. I mean, that race this morning for Scotty Dixon, it was stop-start. They had so many crashes and smashes, including Scotty McLaughlin. It was in and out. It was like COVID. One minute you're racing, next minute you're not. One minute you're in lockdown, next minute you're not. Next minute there's a crowd, and then there's no crowd. And it was slippy and grippy. It wasn't, you know, didn't have a lot of grip, but he survived the carnage. And I think that these two teams survived that sort of stop-start year of the NRL, which affected the Warriors. Melbourne have been away from home on the road for 5 months, but they had the V on their jersey because, you know, that sort of got them into camp. And it was a great example of experience over this weekend. You had Scotty Dixon, 40-year-old, you know, now win number 6 in the IndyCars. You had bellyache, old Craig Bellamy, 61 years old, becomes the oldest winning coach. And then, of course, you had Cameron Smith, 37 years old, the oldest winning captain in the history of the NRL. And it's been great to hear that he's been getting a bit of guidance and inspiration from, you know, Sir Richie McCaw about how to handle all that pressure of being the guy that people love to hate, because Cameron Smith has been so good with Queensland, so good with the Melbourne Storm. He's got his critics, even though he's a legend in the game and possibly one of the best players of all time. He's one of their goats over there in Aussie. But people still love to hate him, so it's good that Richie just basically gave him that, you know, sort of that good old classic understated Kiwi advice: head down, ass up, do what you're good at, and don't worry about what they say, mate, which is great advice. And it was a marvellous game when you consider that Penrith, with, you know, that Kiwi connection with Ivan Cleary being over here with the Warriors, Nathan Cleary went to college here in Auckland in the early days, and now the father and son combo back at the foothills of the Blue Mountain with Penrith, and it's a great stadium there with lots of atmosphere, and you know what the mountain men are like. And so that was a great chance, and going for 18 in a row, that won 17, and you had the baby Panthers. But they were shell-shocked, and you've got to say that Craig Bellamy, what a master coach. Everyone goes on about Wayne Bennett, but Bellamy now is equaling the records of Wayne Bennett. And he did a superb job, the way in which he had them start hard and fast, their speed and their skill, and cutting back on the number of mistakes. And everything that happened in that first half, from the controversial penalty try at the get-go to the no try, the intercept, every penalty, everything went the way of Melbourne. So by, you know, half time, they're up 22-0. It was basically all over when old Pappenhausen, gee, hasn't he got some wheels, made it 26-0. It was game over. But to their credit, the Panthers, as we've found out and other teams have found out, always come back with a late surge. Wasn't good enough this time, but I think congratulations to the Storm, because they are like the Crusaders. They just don't know how to lose. But for the Penrith Panthers, I think it's a case of you've got to lose one to win one, and I can see them coming back next year in the NRL and perhaps going on to, you know, it's the All Blacks say, when you go to summer and you've had a loss, you've always got a stone under your towel. You can never get that. You can never get comfortable, because no matter where you sit, there's always a rock under the blanket. And you've always got this nagging thing about, oh, I stuffed that up, or we didn't do that right. And you've got next year to put it right. So that'll be the challenge for Cleary and the Panthers next year.
Yeah, one thing you can always say about that, Storm, is just the whole setup. Like, you compare them to the Crusaders. Yeah, I would compare them to the Crusaders. It's not just the coaching, it's not just the player, but it's the talent identification. They know how to find a player from anywhere. Like, as I said earlier to Frank Endicott, like, have a look at Nelson, Solomon, Mona, Afoa. wow, that guy's a beast. And, you know, you can tell why New Zealand Rugby Union is still sniffing around the sky, Clint.
It's also attitude. You know, you can take a player from any other province in New Zealand, you put them into the Crusaders lineup, and suddenly they just become a better player. You take any rugby league player, you put them into Bellamy's culture down in Melbourne, and they just become a better player. They go on there, they do their job, they fit into the cog. It's not all about them, it's about, you know, the team, it's about doing the job and making sure that you know exactly what you've got to do when you've got to do it. And they do it and they cut back on the mistakes. And that's that winning culture, that's winning attitude and that professionalism that, you know, outfits like the Crusaders and the Melbourne Storm and the Scotty Dixons of the world actually lay down. And that's, you know, that top 10% where they can be something special and something different, the X factor, even at the top of their game.
Yeah, you're dead right there, Clint. Apart from that, what else has caught your highlights over the sporting weekend, apart from the NRL and the motorsport? Anything that did catch your eye over the weekend?
Disappointed with Man United and the nil-all draw with Chelsea, but I think COVID's going to have ramifications right throughout the EPL, as Brendan would have been talking about. We've seen some weird results so far. And every sport, you don't know how much that lack of extra game time or extra preparation can affect the results as they go through and the odd player testing positive. So it's going to be sort of like just suck and see as we go through the football. I think from a motor racing point of view, I had a great weekend out at Pukekohe yesterday. We had the North Island Endurance Series, the second round there, and it's a bit like class. And in the local, these are the local tracks, the local where the Scotty Dixons, the Scotty McLaughlins and the Shane Van Gisbergens developed their craft, and now they've got their pathway to success overseas, like Earl Bamber and Brendan Hartley. Well, yesterday it was Glenn Smith and also John DeVeth, so the guys from the Naki and the Waikato that had a 1-2 in the 1-hour race in the McLaren, and then a 1-2 where they teamed up to win the 3-hour race in the McLaren, just when the heart of racing, Aston Martin AMR, run by International Motorsport, featuring a guy called Alex Riberas from Spain, teaming up with Darren Kelly, who's a D1NZ driver, had the race in the bag. They were two laps in front, and with about 30 minutes to go in the three-hour race, myself and Stu Ayres were commentating out there at Pukekohe for Fast Files, which was a streaming service on YouTube and Facebook with Adam Jones and DT from Race Control. And all of a sudden, this car just stopped on the back straight, and Smithy and DeVeth got the lead, and they were two laps down and regained that onto the same lap and ended up winning and doing the double in the McLaren. So you never know when it's over. But this harder racing team, they're going to go down to the Nationals at Highlands in a couple of weeks' time in Cromwell. And they're backed by Gabe Newell, who's the American billionaire, who also backs motor racing in America, and he's trying to get citizenship here in New Zealand. But does a great
need him
thing.
Here.
They
we
raised
need
money
here
for the Seattle Children's Hospital, and they also raised money for the Starship. And yesterday they had a whole lot of kids from Starship flowing out in helicopter so they could land at Pukekohe, go and check out the motor racing, and flowing back again. So they're doing a great thing by, you know, spreading the love with the motor racing. And that was a really good event for our local guys to keep developing the stars of the future, like Scotty Dixons and Scotty McLaughlin. So,
and of course,
that was a good day yesterday, mate.
And when you're talking about future stars, obviously Liam Lawson been one of those as well too.
Yeah.
But no, that's really great to hear that people like a guy like Dave Newell is giving so much.
Gabe Newell, he's the American billionaire.
Gabe,
so
Gabe,
gaming.
Gabe.
He's a gaming dude. So like all my sons,
we need him as a New Zealander.
He on a day like today and do lots of gaming.
Yeah.
He's done a great job, you know. And hopefully he's the sort of guy that can move to New Zealand, because everyone wants to move in New Zealand because we've got our economic bubble going, mate. And you know, so life's not too bad down here in Aotearoa, with everyone enjoying a fantastic Labour weekend.
Yeah, it certainly is, and really enjoyed you on today, Clint. And obviously, you've got to wish me luck and wish my liver luck for this Friday coming up when I meet old Brendan at a bar in Wellington. And so, thanks a lot for your time, Clint. Really enjoyed it.
Mate, you just pace yourself. And the other thing I really enjoyed yesterday, as I do every Sunday morning, is getting out for a game of golf at Gulf Harbour. So it was beautiful and sunny, and I had a challenge, a personal challenge, and, you know, you talk about sport, but it's actually good to actually go out and play it. So I was a 20 handicapper many years ago, and I thought, no.
Clint, we're just about to run out of time, mate.